Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Tyler is on. It is I, Van Lathan.
And it's me, Rachel Lindsay.
Rachel Lindsay, listen, we had a spirited conversation before the podcast started.
It was quite spirited.
Rachel is still trying to name five Christina Milian movies or songs.
Off the top of my head without Googling. Yes.
Without Googling. And it's a sad thing because I was not trying to diss Christina Milian. What I was just saying was that I feel like Rachel and to a degree Trudy are great producer was sort of overrating Christina Milian just a tad bit.
I love that Van is telling y'all that he's not hating. Both Trudy and myself were basically saying, give Christina Milian some flowers, give her her credit, because Van said that she was, and I quote, a sliver above Tinashe.
Yeah.
Which like, I cannot get behind. I cannot co-sign that statement. No.
Okay.
Christina Milian has done way more than Tinashe. And she's more relevant.
True.
And she's more relevant than Tinashe.
Maybe.
Wow.
And what I said was, y'all said she's done so much stuff.
Just because I didn't say I was a super fan. I can't name every single thing she does. She does too many things to name.
This is all I said. She had a reality show. She's done a lot of stuff. This is all I said. All I said was, look, she's done so much. You guys like it. I said, for both of you, name me five Christina Milian songs and then name me five Christina Milian movies. Couldn't do it.
I feel like if you have a discography on Wikipedia, a filmography, then you're doing some things.
She's doing some things. But the question is, how much of an impact do those things make?
Let me look up Tinashe real quick. Because I'm still scrolling through Christina Milian. I have a feeling I'm not going to be doing
that. Christina Milian's been out a lot longer than Tinashe. Tinashe's 28. Christina Milian is nearly 40.
That doesn't mean that her I'm looking when she got started. It's this early 2000s. She was already doing some stuff.
Who? Tinashe?
Tinashe.
Right. When did she drop? When did Tinashe drop? She was with Roc Nation. She was in the Polar Express as a child. And then she had a reoccurring role on Two and a Half Men. She was on Out of Jimmy's Head on the Cartoon Network. She was a member of the girl group The Stunners. Ooh, they had some mixtapes. Her debut single, Two On, was featuring fucking Schoolboy Q and produced by Mustard. That came out in 2013. Tinashe. Still
Christina Milian has been nominated for multiple Grammys.
As what?
As a singer. What do you mean?
But like as a featured artist, right?
No, for her stuff.
Like what was she nominated for a Grammy for?
Let me go back. Awards and nomination. Grammy Award for Best Contemporary R&B Album.
Oh, really?
Best Grammy Award for Best Rap/Song Collaboration.
That is with Ja Rule.
That is with Fabulous.
Fabulous or Ja Rule is with somebody.
But the first one is all her.
It's by herself, yeah. Yeah. So here's the deal. Like, what I'm looking at it is this. And this is the thing. Bring It On, Fight to the Finish, ABC Family Original Movie, Family Original Movie, Christmas Cupid. She's been around for a long time. I know the movies that she's been in and stuff like that. But what I'm telling you is that the reality is that she just hasn't made that much of an impact. It's the truth. She has a great career, hasn't made an impact.
I think they're both great women. I think Christina has had more of an impact, more than a sliver. She's had more of an impact to the culture, in pop culture, more than a sliver of that than Tinashe. But at the end of the day, Van, I don't want it to put two black women against one another.
You already did. So here's the deal. This is what they said when we were doing the pub. When they did it. And so as soon as I said it, because we were comparing, this is why this happened. We were comparing, Rachel said that she interviewed Chloe and Hallie. And then I said, I'm partial to Normani. See, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I love comparing artists. I love comparing art. It's, to me, there's nothing wrong with it. Comparing, just like I say, hey, Kobe Bryant's better than Dwayne Wade. It's the same way I say sure. I'm partial to Normani over Chloe.
And then you didn't use the word partial.
I said she's better. She's better. Normani is better. I feel like Normani is getting fucking hosed in the game. I think Normani is getting hosed in the game.
She's everywhere.
She's getting, no. They're giving, Chloe is getting all of this stuff, but really it's Normani. Now, Chloe and Normani don't want to do this. They don't want to have this back and forth because they are too classy for it. They don't want a retread of Monica and Brandy. They don't want a retread of Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey. They don't want a retread of Beyonce and Rihanna. But guess what? That's what's going to happen. And it's good. It's good. It's good for the consumer. It's good for the artists. Nas and Jay-Z, good for the culture. Prince and Michael Jackson, good for the culture. It's good as long as people don't hate the other person.
Correct.
As long as they don't hate, as long as they don't. The Cardi B, Nicki thing went too far because they actually got to swinging on each other for real.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it's good. And just to be real with you, I love Christina Milian. She's a very nice person. She's very talented. Mm-hmm. But I was just saying, I feel like you guys were making it like Christina Milian was. But to be honest with you, every woman of that era suffered under the weight of Beyonce or Rihanna. They all did.
Was Rihanna that early?
Rihanna was maybe like 2004, 2005.
Was she that early?
Yep.
Wow.
Like Music of the Sun. It came out and then they started building. Because think about it. It used to be a very healthy group of ladies. Sierra was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sierra was definitely in the group.
Maya was still around.
Maya
was dope. Maya got Maya and Brandy got their run in the 90s, right? And then, unfortunately, of course, we lost Aaliyah. But then, like, as Beyonce really grabbed everything.
She took control.
The only person that really had any oxygen was Rihanna. Rihanna came up in there, hey, and then she did her thing.
Yeah. Good points.
So it's just been recently, as Beyonce has become the elder stateswoman of this, that you've seen a crop of amazing, the SZAs, the Summer Walkers, all of these people come out. And now there might be a passing of the baton to Chloe. I think that's what Beyonce's trying to do. She's trying to pass the baton right over Normani and give it to Chloe.
Well, obviously, Chloe signed to her. So she's definitely, if she's passing the baton to anyone, it's Chloe.
And you think Chloe's better than Normani?
Van, I think they're both great.
I need you to make a decision.
In what way? They're both fantastic artists. But for me, I like Chloe over Normani. If we're comparing the two, I'm into Chloe's music more than I'm into Normani's. I'm into Chloe's style, the musical styles of Chloe than I am Normani.
Rachel, how was your weekend? How was your weekend?
It was okay. I mean, I worked. Rachel, are you tired?
Are your spirits low?
I've been working like 14 days straight.
Oh, man.
No days off, and I'm exhausted. So it's, once again, I worked another event this weekend. I did have some fun, though.
What was fun about the weekend? Tell us Rachel's World. This is a new segment called Rachel's World. Rachel's World.
I'm really putting myself out there and meeting new people.
Okay.
So Friday, I went to a dinner. Of a friend that I met through another friend. He hosted a dinner, had like a chef serve, had people from all walks of life, like dancers, singers, production, on air people, tech. And it was great. And I was meeting all these new people, like a couple of friends I knew, like Justin and Scott. You know, Justin, you met Justin at LSU game.
Yeah, he's great.
And so it was so much fun. And then we left the dinner and we went to Nightingale because they have a party, which I'm so not used to in LA. It's a very LA thing. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to party? Oh, I'm going to go party at the Highlight Room. But on Wednesdays, it's called Sadiq. So they're you name parties on days. I'm not used to that.
So the promoters can brand themselves.
Okay, so very new, very LA. Mm-hmm. So this party was called Evita at Nightingale on Fridays. It was great. Like Cupcake performed. They were voguing. They like created like a Soul Train line of voguing. There was like a drag show. There were other performances. It was great. I had such a fun time. Work Saturday. Mm. Sunday, I went to my friend Megan's birthday party. I had a good time meeting a bunch of people. Yeah. It's good. What'd you do this weekend?
Chilled out. LSU Saturday. Football Sunday.
Ooh.
What?
Yes. I am so glad you brought that up.
I did.
Because what happened on Saturday? Who beat who in the SEC? Proving that they are not the bottom of at the bottom of the SEC.
Who beat who? I don't know what you're talking about.
Arkansas beat Texas A&M.
It's true. Arkansas is good this year.
And you accused me of losing to one of the worst teams in the SEC. And I said, Arkansas is actually really good. It's not that Texas is bad. Arkansas is very good. And then Arkansas knocked off the number 7 team in the country.
Arkansas is a good team.
Great team.
Arkansas is not a blue blood in the SEC.
We're talking about this year.
Yeah, well, this year they're pretty good. But yep. Here's the thing, though. So is UCLA. You know, like, so is UCLA. The point was, you were like, they lost to an unranked team.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Arkansas was an unranked team. So mm-hmm. is UCLA. Arkansas is doing their thing. But the reality of the situation is that Texas is not going to come into the SEC and dominate. And neither will Oklahoma. Oklahoma flat out is, they kind of whack.
Let's time stamp this and revisit this in 2 years. Okay. When we get
Texas
into the SEC.
Texas hasn't won a national championship since 2005. They haven't won the conference. Like, Texas football is down. Like, Oklahoma's been slapping them about
that. Don't act like we didn't go to the national championship in 2009, though. Don't act like we didn't get back there, okay?
No,
lost because our quarterback got hurt on the first play.
Yeah. So here's the thing about that. That's like 13 years ago. Like, that's like a long time.
What are the years that LSU has won?
We won in 2000. We won a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
We won in 2003. We won in 2003. We won in 2007.
Okay. And we won in 2005. And we went back in 2009. You just won again. And now you're big talking.
We won the SEC in 2011.
Nobody cares about that stuff.
Oh, we don't care. Like,
nobody cares about winning the conference championship.
All I'm saying is that Texas hadn't been shit in a long time. And you can't say the same about LSU. You just can't. Texas hadn't been shit. How many coaches has Texas had?
Let's see. Since Mac?
Yeah.
We're on our third.
Right. Third coach since Mac. Third coach at Texas. Tom Herman, nothing. Steve Sarkisian, nothing.
He just started. What do you mean he's 3 games in? He's 2-1. Don't do that.
2-1. 2-1. Listen. And
by the way, Soror as a wife?
And whoa. He's married to a black woman?
Yeah, he is.
Go Texas.
Got him. Yes, Hook he him. Is. And Hook she's him. Fabulous.
Hook him. Remember when he was drunk? We covered that whole thing.
Let's not do that.
We covered that whole thing at TMZ.
I'm sure you did.
He was so drunk, man. He was drunk. They fired him. He got his
life back on track.
But you know where he went to get his life back on track? What conference did he visit?
He went to Alabama to get his life back on track.
He went to the SEC to get his life back on track. I'm actually happy for Sark. That is actually a very, very good story. And by the way, in the SEC West this year, all of the teams that are traditionally down are actually the teams that are the great in the conference. Besides Alabama, you have Ole Miss, which is fucking fantastic. Matt Corral, quarterback, Lane Kiffin. And then you have Arkansas, who's doing well as well. Arkansas beat the entire state of Texas. They fucked over Texas A&M. They fucked over Texas. And they're actually, to your point, they're looking pretty good. So you got a WNBA thing on the back of his WNBA, Tennessee, burnt orange. How do you feel about the WNBA and them saying that they deserve pay that's equal to the NBA or on par or better pay?
On par makes sense. I mean, they're not going to get the exact amount because they don't play as many games and all of that. But I don't know what the salaries are, but last time I checked, it was like a significant difference. It's embarrassing. That's why they have to go, they go overseas and they make way more money.
A lot more.
So it's like, can we at least get on par with overseas? Can they at least not have to leave our country to get the respect that they deserve when it comes to pay? Like, it needs to be on par for sure. Having just gone to a WNBA game, I had a fabulous time and the energy is great and they have really loyal fans, and it's been a while since I've been to a game and it has made like drastically improved audience wise
from
the last time. From audience wise, I mean, like the support from the the game is significantly growing. And they definitely, it's ridiculous. It's embarrassing what they're getting paid.
I want to ask you something that I just heard Bill Burr say. So Bill Burr, comedian, who's always ruffling feathers, he does a bit where he says, women complain about the WNBA and how much the WNBA players are making. It's like a lot of women complain about that. But then he goes, women don't support the WNBA. And he says, if women supported the WNBA, they would be making more money. He's like, you know who women support? He said women support like the Kardashians or the Real Housewives, people who make significantly more money than WNBA players do because they have much bigger audiences that generate a lot more revenue. I thought to myself, I was like, I'm not going to lie, he kind of has a point about that. Like, do you think it's the WNBA audience is like very, very, it's very small compared to the NBA audience?
Sure.
I'm thinking to myself, like, how do you balance that? Like, how do you balance the fact that it's not as popular a league, even though it is really great to watch? It's not as popular a league, and it's not necessarily popular with women overall. So who's who?
And I'm not, this is not a sexist statement in any kind of way, but like, I think that's a hard comparison to make because you're then assuming that women are into sports as much, right? Like, so if you said that women were supporting basketball and not supporting the NBA and not supporting the WNBA, okay. But you're saying they're watching Housewives and Kardashians. Those same people who are watching that may not be into sports, period. So are you saying they have to watch the WNBA because it's women that are playing?
I'm not saying, so then it's not a woman's issue then.
Correct. It's my point. That's why I say what Bill Burr say is like.
Well, no. So then
it's people who watch sports.
I know. So then it's not an issue of sexism at all then.
Okay.
Because what the point that he's making, and by the way, he's being incendiary in making the point.
Sure.
The point that he's making is that there are things that women like a lot. And rather it be like whatever it is, we know that the Real Housewives or even the Bachelor or the Bachelorette, those are driven by female numbers. So there are things that women like a lot.
Correct.
The WNBA happens to not be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue in and of itself, if it's something that women aren't really supporting, because women might be sports fans that are, I'm sure the WNBA has a majority female audience. Actually, I'm not sure about that. I don't know whether that's true or not. I would imagine that a lot of the people that support it are female, but if you can't put a gender on the argument itself and say, well, women don't watch sports as much, and then the portion of women that watch the WNBA are smaller, then where does that match up in terms of what salaries they should be getting? The you know what I mean? So like it's like, where's the money supposed to come from?
I mean, so you're saying that they should be paid based on how many people are watching their sport?
Well, I'm saying everybody is. To me, I think they deserve... No. This is not what I'm saying. I think WNBA players deserve more money.
No, I'm not saying you're deserving, but what you just said
What I'm saying is, for people who are going to argue against it...
Yeah, okay.
Like, to me, this is the way I feel. And I've always felt this way, and this comes from me being at TMZ. If you on TV, get paid like you're on TV. So if the WNBA players aren't worth more money than what they're making right now, because we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars at some point, then just dissolve the league. If they're not worth that, if they're not worth making that much more money, then just dissolve the league. That's the way I look at it. Now, the players would say that they would never do that because they sure. would never want to do that because the WNBA is a huge promotional tool for them inside the United States of America. The question is, if somebody comes to you and just argues straight dollars,
mm-hmm.
How do you answer them?
I mean, that's tough. Like I don't even know if I would have a counter argument to it. If you're basing it just off of the money that's coming in, based on the people who watch it and the people who are sponsoring it, you know, like how much sponsorship dollars they're getting, then it's hard to say equal if the amount's not the same. Yeah, that's tough. Because then you could go bankrupt if you're not bringing in a certain amount of money that you're giving out.
Right. I think they might be. I don't know if the WNBA makes a profit, though.
And again, I don't know either. Right. I don't know.
It's just interesting. I personally think it's just a bad look. I really, if you want to be honest, I would do it just for the optics. Like, it's like they could afford to do it. So I would do it. Literally, I would do it just for the optics. Just for the optics. The optics are bad. And I also think that the league, that the NBA could promote the league better, and we could get to know the players better, and they could do different things and do more stuff, because all of these problems that we have with the NBA, we don't have any of them with the WNBA. The WNBA is 99% vaccinated. The WNBA was in lockstep with social justice from the beginning. You didn't have all of this different stuff, right? So the league, there is a lot to be, and the game itself, if you like basketball, if you love basketball, like I love basketball, there's no way you can watch a WNBA game and say it's not entertaining.
I know, that's right.
Now, if you like watching guys do athletic feats, and that makes you a casual fan. If you say, oh, if motherfucker's not dunking, I don't like basketball, and you're a casual fan, then yeah, that's cool.
Watch you and one.
You want to see people catch lobs, that shit is very entertaining to watch.
I used to be so into it back
then.
That
shit is very entertaining to watch. Very. So, but if you like basketball, they out there hooping. And the product is better than it's ever been. But I just thought about that and I just wondered. I want to talk to a WNBA player about that. I want to have that very discussion.
We'll bring on Shanae.
We'll bring on Shanae. And like, because she's the person that asked to shoot down that narrative, because somebody sent that to me and they were like, this is, he's killing your equal pay argument. And I've never said equal. I say they deserve more money.
On par is what you said, which I think doesn't necessarily have to mean equal.
Yeah. 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 So let me, okay. So we've done two topics
that are not on the rundown
that have talked about young women.
Yeah, get off us, Van.
And I'm going to be, and we're about to do another topic that talks about young women. Oh. And this is a tough segue. Thought Warriors, clutch your pearls. I know you love to clutch them. Because it's time to talk about the R. Kelly verdict.
The segue.
I didn't want to just go speaking of young women.
Maybe this is why my stomach is hurting so bad. This is why your stomach, I'm sitting like this, by the way. Like my stomach is killing me.
You're disgusted. Over this R. Kelly verdict. You're disgusted over this verdict. You're disgusted. R. Kelly, jurors in the Eastern District of New York have found R. Kelly guilty. 9 counts, 1 count of racketeering with 14 underlying acts that included sexual exploitation of a child, kidnapping, bribery, and sex trafficking charges. Also, 8 additional counts of violation of the Mann Act, which is a sex trafficking law. 7 men, 7 women began deliberating on Friday afternoon. He is scheduled to be sentenced May 4th of next year, which is a while away. He's got a lot of other stuff in other states to kind of clear up. But R. Kelly is now busted on these things. The sentence looks like it could be a lengthy one. He's 54 now. Chances are very slim that R. Kelly will ever see the light of day again because he's got charges everywhere.
Right.
Who knows the way this works out? This is a big deal. Racketeering. R. Kelly basically ran a whole operation
for sure
for years for the purposes of grooming, exploiting, and then holding captive young women. When you first saw this, what did you think?
Bye. Good. Mm. Go. I mean, this has been going on for who knows how long. You know, I think, we talked about this on the podcast. We always heard things. We chose to turn a blind eye to it. We kept listening to the music, kept going to concerts, kept defending him. And there's a whole Boondocks episode on it. And we, like, because he was R. Kelly. Because he was R. Kelly. And simply because of the music that he was giving us and what he meant to our culture. And then Surviving R. Kelly came out. And it really opened people's eyes in a way they could no longer turn away from what he was doing. It wasn't just a rumor anymore. It became a reality. You were confronted with the very people who were living under R. Kelly's rule. And I'm happy to see him go down. It's Mighty is the fall. I don't think he'll ever come out of jail. I can't imagine him. I mean, with all these charges that are against him, it's going to be decades and decades of sentencing. I mean, I can't imagine he'll ever see an outside of a prison cell again or a prison walls again. But he's got to go. This is the only right thing. And I'm glad that, I guess, justice, if you want to call it that, prevailed in this instance.
He actually is facing charges in another state, I think Florida, of fixing the trial that he had in the late 2000s where he beat the charges. So there may be some foul play involved in why he was never convicted of criminal charges in the first place. I got to ask you a question. Do you feel guilty at all?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is mm-hmm. this the biggest cultural blind spot that we've ever had?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember if I said this on the, well, no, Michael. But I think that I said this on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. Yes, I said that. I said this on the podcast before. I remember being at the University of Texas. R. Kelly was performing on stage and there were protesters. Uh-huh. And I was like, excuse me, excuse right. me, excuse yeah. me. You know, I went on stage that night. He was inviting people to step in the name of love. I stepped in the name of love. And it was like, I didn't want to hear or see anything that they were saying. It is. I feel guilty.
Disgusting.
I didn't want to hear anything people were saying because I wanted to enjoy myself for a few hours that night. And yes, I do feel guilty. Yes, because I chose to ignore it. You know, he was on trial before. He wasn't found guilty. And I was like, well, you know, he wasn't found guilty. So, you know, like that was really the way that I was thinking of it. And I do feel bad because obviously it had been going on way before that. And I chose the music over the people, the victims. Hmm. So I do feel guilty.
Yeah. So
you
I'm
don't?
Not even going to, I'm not going to, of course, okay. I feel worse than guilty. I
okay,
feel
good.
Complicit.
I was going to say.
So, I mean,
Dan, please.
I mean, you know, I've never been invited on the stage to step in the name of love, but at the time I was 360 pounds. So there wouldn't have been a lot of, you know, I'd have been up there. It'd have been stomping in the name of love. Everybody would have been stepping.
Please,
and it'd
my
been
stomach
like,
hurts so bad.
Stomping in the name of love. Boom, boom, boom. You ever see Jurassic Park? When
the water jiggles.
You ever see the Jurassic Park when the fucking T-Rex is stomping? And like, the water is rippling through the water. That would have been
Don't
everybody's
do that to yourself.
Soda.
Stop. That wasn't
so,
true.
but no, so this is why I put the R. Kelly situation
I close my eyes and I see the water jiggling.
Boom. Boom. Boom.
Stop. It's like,
this is why I put the R. Kelly situation in a different light than everything. And it'll come as no secret to everyone, even Michael Jackson. I'll tell you why I put it in a different light than everyone. And this is not to compare the two cases. And we're eventually going to do the whole Michael Jackson thing so we can talk about it. But so like in 95 or 94, I was watching a show called Video Vibrations. There were two video shows that came on BET. One was Video Soul. Then the other one was Video Vibrations. Video Soul was the flagship. Video Vibrations was just like a video show that came on later on or whatever. Show videos, people would pop in or whatever. And I remember there was a point in Video Vibrations, this is 94, 95, where it broke away to something and it said, singer R. Kelly and Aaliyah have been married. It might have been earlier than that. It might have been like 93. They've been married. And it showed R. Kelly and they were showing B-roll from one of his videos. He's up there, he's with the leather and he's got ball. And I was like, God damn, they married? I remember thinking, shit, Aaliyah is my age. Like, he married her? And they were married. It was reported on this show that they were married, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were married. X amount of time happened. They annulled it, got divorced or whatever. Never addressed it. R. Kelly moved on. Aaliyah became a huge, huge global superstar. R. Kelly got even more popular when the R album came out. And then you had, Half on the Baby and everything was on there. And then after that, you had TP2.com, which just completely took over everything. Still one of the greatest albums ever made. You know what I mean? And so no one even thought about it. No one even mentioned it, right? Cool. Then the piece of child pornography, it's not sex tape, but the piece of child pornography was released. Everybody watched it. It became a cultural talking point. There was at no point in that we didn't know the age of the girl. Like Miss Jones was on the radio in New York crying and begging Jay-Z not to do the Best of Both Worlds album that they eventually did, by the way, because of what she had just saw. Everybody was watching it as if what was taking place wasn't a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was a lot younger, but I sat back when I heard about the verdict and I thought, why did no one ring the alarm? I think there's a couple reasons. Number one, I think we communicated about these things a lot less, and I don't think we had
I don't think that we had
realized the gravity of what was going on. Like, a 14-year-old girl was being raped, and like, we made skits and jokes, and it became I remember R. Kelly called himself the Pied Piper, and after he called himself the Pied Piper on those songs, I was like, yo, does he know who the Pied Piper was? He shouldn't be calling himself that. It was a punchline, but we never really gave a shit about the actual abuse that was taking place. I don't know if we even saw it as abuse.
It was a sign of the times. That video came out today, it would have been a totally different reaction.
Oh, think about my that. God, of course.
It's a sign of the times. Remember Mad TV was a... Do you remember that skit, Mad TV, The World's Greatest?
Yeah.
And the song was The World's Greatest Statutory Rapist. And the girls were holding signs with their underages on it. And there was the, I want to piss on you. It was a joke. But these are actual crimes. And we were all laughing at it.
And the web that he wove in order to be able to do this. This was a compulsion. This was a life's goal for R. Kelly that in many ways was more focused and bigger than the music.
Yeah.
We're talking about racketeering charges here. We're talking about a conspiracy that he had to maintain in order to feed young women to his desire. He had to manufacture victims over a long period of time. And we let him. And I wonder now, who are the R. Kellys? Who are hurting people in all of these ways that we're just letting them do it?
Here's the thing too.
Start to walk.
You're putting together that big of a web, as you said. Spinning together that big of a web, you can't do it by yourself. Who are these people helping you do it? Mm-hmm. You're not doing that alone. That's what you also have to look at. So I would hope that there are other people who are getting charged as well, because R. Kelly didn't do this by himself. There's no way that he could have. There was a team of people helping him get off and do this for years and years and years.
We're talking about groom the young girls. control the young girls. One woman said that there was a certain sexual position that R. Kelly liked her in, and he would make her stay in that position for hours. Like this, like, and some of the stuff that we're learning, R. Kelly's, one of his biggest calling cards was the fact that he had a large sexual appetite. Like, he always talked about it in all of his songs, and that's why he, you know, he wrote a bunch of songs about sex and making love and all of that stuff, or whatever. This is not sex that we're talking about. This is rape, what we're talking about. But no one, I never thought that he was this much of a deviant. And how could you not think that after you you watched that tape?
I never saw the tape. You know that?
It was a big thing. I was in college at that point.
I mean, I was still living under my parents' roof, so there was no way that was getting into the Lindsay household. I knew about it, but I never saw it.
Well, you're lucky. It was very blurry, hard to make out in points, but it was a cultural phenomenon. It was something that everybody watched. And by the way, everybody who watched it was breaking the law, was participating in it. It's wild. It's not like I feel like, I feel guilty, but I also feel deeply disturbed and disappointed in my generation, in my group, and myself. It's like, we went on to be entertained by this stuff. Entertained by Step in the Name of Love, entertained by You Saved Me, entertained by Trapped in the Closet, all of that stuff. And even as early as If Not for Dream Hampton, shout out to Dream Hampton. If not for Dream Hampton, who did Surviving R. Kelly, if not for Dream Hampton, nothing would have changed. And Dream Hampton and the very courageous women who came out and broke the chains of what they were going through and put their sanity on the line. If not for them, this continues.
It's interesting when you talk about, you say you're disappointed in the generation and, you know, like that people were still listening to the music and no, people were watching the tape and it was the punchline for jokes on late night shows and comedy tours and all of that. And it's this whole argument of, do you separate the music from the artist? Or do you see it all together? And I think that's what the generation was doing. And I'm not excusing it. I just think that that's what we do. We separate the person who's making the music from the actual music. Mm-hmm. And what I've come to realize with R. Kelly, you know, after realizing how wrong it all was and how we were so guilty and that we were continuing to praise him and listen to his music and support and all that, is that when you... I can't even listen to songs anymore because I don't know who you were talking about when you were talking about those songs. And I don't think that you can separate the artist from the music. This recently came under fire in the Grammys, just this last Grammys. The man who Kesha accuses of raping her, he changed his name.
Dr. Luke changed his name, yeah.
Changed his name. And he got nominated for a Grammy this year because he produced Doja Cat's song, Say So. And there was a lot of controversy surrounding that because it's, should he be nominated knowing that these accusations and allegations are out here against him? And I remember interviewing Harvey Macy Jr. and I asked him that question and he talked about separating the artist from the music. I don't think that that's fair. I personally do not think that you can do that. What do you think?
I think that people do it selectively. Mm. I think you separate the artist from the music based upon what you care about. So if right now Eminem came out and said, and they did have old videos of him saying this. So let's not use Eminem. If Jack Harlow came out right now and was like, there was a video of Jack Harlow going, fuck all the niggers. Fuck them. I make this nigger music for these niggers.
There's a video of Eminem doing that?
There's a tape of Eminem. Eminem was dating a black girl back in the day. And so this is a moment in hip hop history. Eminem some kind of way found himself at odds with a guy who got pitched to us to come on this podcast, which his name is Dave Mays, who used to run Source Magazine. And Dave Mays and Benzino, they ran the Source. Source magazine was a hip hop Bible. They would give five mics. It was a five mic rating system. We all know this. And then they gave Benzino five mics, and we never trusted the Source again. Because we were like, there's no fucking way Benzino get no five mics. Dave Mays gave his brother, his homeboy, five mics. Anyway, they were going back and forth with Eminem for whatever. Eminem and the whole fucking camp, they were going back and forth with Eminem. And they included a CD of something that Eminem had done back in the day where I guess he was mad at a girl and he had broken up with her. She was black. And he had made a song where he referred to her as a nigger and did all of these things. It was on tape, and then the Source put it out. The Source did it. The Source was going back and forth with Eminem. M came out, he apologized. He said he was in the spot. He was mad. He did this, he did that, whatever. He was different and all of that. I think it didn't really hit as much because it was something from his past. Once again, he was younger when he did it. Whatever, people moved on. Also, it was a different time. What I'm telling you is right now, number one, that could never be revealed about a rap artist that was white and have them survive it. I mean, I'm sure they keep some of their white fans, but right now, if you saw that happen, people wouldn't separate the art and the artist. Right. Because the reason why they wouldn't separate the art and the artist is because the only time you do that is when you're offended. Mm. Like, are you offended? Has he hurt you?
Right.
So if he says the N-word, I'm offended. I'm gonna be angry every time I see him. The question to ask is why sometimes that doesn't happen when you're talking about artists who offend or abuse LGBTQ people or women or people like that. Why don't we take that offense? Why don't we go, hey, I'm pissed off? Like in the sense with R. Kelly, like why weren't we mad at it? Because it's number one, thinking is disgusting is one thing, but why weren't, like, a 14-year-old girl, we saw it, so why were we not mad about it?
You just answered your question. People get enraged over things that impact them, where they can feel it affected them, it affected a family member, it affected a close friend. So it hits home. And if you knew the 14-year-old, you would have had a totally different reaction. But yeah, people separated it. And it was just it was a young girl in a blurry video. Or people like me who never even saw it and you heard it. So it almost, you knew it happened, but it almost wasn't real because I never even saw it. Obviously it was, and I've admitted my guilt in all of this. I'm just saying the things we do to excuse bad behavior.
Yes.
And we all do it.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to the Democrats.
This is a depressing podcast.
It is depressing, but we're fucking doing it because I'm sick of the Democrats.
Okay.
Look, you guys, first of all,
yeah, you're angry.
Fuck
Go em. Ahead.
Let me preface this real quick. I understand that there are a lot of obstruction. There's a lot of obstruction going on right now in Washington. I understand that the Democrats trying to get their agendas passed are battling not only the right, but they're battling two moles in their own party, Manchin and Sinema, trying to get these things done. Okay. But I don't appreciate the effort that's being given, and I don't appreciate the way that things are going. Case in point, we are stalled right now in the George Floyd Policing Act. We're stonewalled. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. Cory Booker has been talking about this.
Right.
When Cory Booker talks about the fact that the George Floyd in Policing Act is at an impasse, a standstill right now, this is what he says. He says, it was a frustrating experience in the sense that we had the biggest civil rights demonstration in this country's history asking for change. We wanted to have more transparency, higher professional standards, and real accountability. If you break the law, you should be shielded from that, he added. He added that he hopes to get it done in the future, and he spoke very warmly of the guy he was doing the bill with, which is, of course, Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Cory Booker was very conciliatory. He was affable when talking about Senator Scott. He made it seem like there were things that him and Senator Scott just couldn't agree on, but they both in their heart wanted to get something done. He believes in the sincerity of Senator Scott. He also said that he had the head of the police union on board to get something done, something that they could do, but just couldn't make it happen with Senator Scott, a guy who's his friend, who he likes, who he believes in. This is what Senator Tim Scott had to say about it. He said, "We said simply this: I'm not going to participate in reducing funding for the police after we saw major city after major city defund the police." He said the bill advocated for defunding the police and was the left's obsession with defunding the police that brought the bill to a standstill. All right. What he is doing is directly blaming the people who he feels like are responsible mm-hmm. for making the bill not go. What Cory Booker is doing is saying, hey, a lot of people wanted this, but we just couldn't make it happen. Right? We tried, but we failed. Whereas Senator Tim Scott is saying, hey, this is Cory Booker's fault. The Democrats are playing flag football and the Republicans are playing the Hunger Games. It's completely different. Now, let me tell you why it matters. It matters because as Black people, as Americans, we turned out to the polls in record numbers in order to get an agenda through. We turned out in the polls in record numbers. We had women like Stacey Abrams working their asses off to flip states that hadn't gone Democrat in years because we saw problems in this country. We saw things going wrong in this country, and what we were told was that there were people who would fight tooth and nail and to the last cell of the last drop of blood in their body to get those things passed. Mm-hmm. And we didn't fucking put them in there to be nice about it.
Yeah.
If Manchin is the enemy of voting rights and police reform in America, cast Manchin as the enemy. If Kristen Sinema is the enemy of voting rights and police reform in America, cast Kristen Sinema as the enemy. If Tim Scott, a Black man from South Carolina, doesn't want to be a part of Black Americans feeling safer in cities all over this country, then Cory Booker and the Democrats look into a camera somewhere and point out who the enemies are. But I can tell you one thing. The carrot is not going to work. They only respect the stick. And to watch them act like we got time to fuck around, to watch them act like we have the luxury of another 4, 5, 6 years of this. He's like, I'm a promise we're going to get it done. I'm dedicated to get it done. This is all the things that we've done before and this and this. And these are people and I don't want to make it acrimonious. And I'm not asking for acrimony. I'm asking for truth. And I'm asking for people to fight for democracy as if democracy is in peril. I'm asking for you to fucking give a fuck and talk to us like you do. And I don't understand what the Democrats think that they're doing. We know shit's not going good, by the way. We got eyes. We see how Black people are being treated in Texas, how Haitians are being treated. We see this. We can see this with our eyes. We saw how the Afghanistan thing was fucked up. We can see it. We can see this. We're looking around and watching the COVID numbers go crazy. It's a tough job. It's tough. It's a tough time to be a leader in this country. I get it. We're not asking for anything to be sugarcoated. We're asking to tell us who's making it fucking taste bad. And that's the only way to ratchet up political power. Hey, yo, go get rid of the filibuster. Pack the court. If all of these things are as important as you say that they are, then let's get through the bullshit and try to get them done. And if you can't, if there are actually reasons why you can't, then you need to tell America what those reasons are. Tell the people who supported you what those reasons are and what they need to do to overcome those things. And I'm just sick of playing this game like it's a softball game. Actually, I'm not going to diss the softball players like that. That's a tough fucking sport. All the ladies out there that are playing softball, it's a tough sport. Tried to hit a softball one time from the lady that was throwing it fast pitch. She made me look like a fucking idiot. So that's no softball. What I'm telling you is it's fucking flag football. It's jump rope. I'm sick of it. I'm done. I'm done with this.
So I understand your frustration and I understand the sentiment that you just expressed. Every single thing that you said, I'm listening to you and I'm like, so let's just say Cory Booker had been like, actually, you know, I thought Tim Scott was a friend and he's not. And let me tell you why. Because he's basically calling me a liar and he's saying that we didn't want to come together on this issue and we wanted to fund the police when actuality that's not the case, but he's using talking points from the Republican Party instead of actually trying to come together and work on this bill. Let's just say Cory Booker said that.
Yes.
Nothing would change.
Yes, it would.
I don't think so. I don't think that all, because I do think he should speak out, and I agree with you, and watching him get interviewed and watching him say all the politically correct things, watching him call Tim Scott a friend, watching him say, Tim Scott and I have both had issues with the police. We've both dealt with things as one of the few Black senators, not just present, but just ever in the Senate. And he's comparing himself constantly to Tim Scott and giving him all this like credibility. But at the same time, Tim Scott can't turn around and do that stuff for you. It was infuriating to watch, so much that a white man, Joe Scarborough, was like, I get what you're trying to do.
Two white men. Scarborough did it and Chuck Todd did it too.
It's like, I get what you're trying to say, but I'm frustrated. So you as a Black man, how are you standing up here taking up for him? I get you're trying to be the bigger person, but that's not going to get you where at the end of the day. I understand all that. But even if Cory Booker did speak out, all it would be is this party saying something and this party saying something. And that's the frustrating thing. Nothing still would get done other than us being like, thank you, Cory Booker, for saying what should be said to Tim Scott and all these Republican senators or these moderates that are out here calling themselves Democrats for the vote, but then voting on the other side and helping the other side. That to me what I guess I disagree with, that things would change. But the reason that I'm so frustrated with Senator Booker and what he had to say is because, and the Democrats in general, is police reform is at a standstill. Who suffers in this? Not the Republicans. The people who need it the most are the ones who are going to suffer as a lack of the inaction that's coming, the lack of inaction from the Senate. The people who need the help, the people who need, the reason there needs to be reform are the ones who are going to suffer. The constituents who put these Democrats in the Senate, they're the ones who are voting for this. They're the ones who are going to suffer. None of these people who are actually standing up in front of the microphone are the ones who are technically going to suffer. It's your constituents. And the fact that nothing is being done, the inaction is extremely harmful. That's what I think I find even more frustrating in all of this. Go ahead.
No,
I was just going to say, and so to stand up there and say that Senator Tim Scott has had issues with the police, he's obviously not moved in the same way than the people who are actually suffering at the hands of the police, the people who are demanding the police reform. Don't even put that out there, because he's obviously doesn't care enough to see some sort of change. He's more concerned with checking off the right talking points for the next election and to get voted back into office than he is about actually helping the people who look like him.
That's the point that I'm going to make right now. What you just said, I'll tell you what can change. What you just said is the next election. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is what's going to happen now. Something else that Cory Booker did when he was on both of these shows is that he went through a list of things that Biden has gotten done for Black America. He's talked about these things. He says that Biden has done more in his first year for Black Americans than any other president. He gave a list of things,
that
right?
Sounds familiar.
He did. He's given a list of things. Let me tell you what the purpose of him doing that is and what the purpose of him going to bat and being more taking the gloves off and going to war with Tim Scott is that there's another election in 2 years. And when there's another election in 2 years, you're going to look at Joe Biden's agenda as a black voting bloc. And there are going to be people that say, hey, he promised you police reform. He couldn't get it done. They're going to say, hey, he promised you voting rights. He couldn't get it done. All right. He didn't do those things. He never wanted to do them. He only wanted your vote. And if there's no counter argument to that, if there's no counter argument to that, if people are not educated on the people who are being obstructionists in government, then they're going to buy that. And you're going to see a listless voter group with a who's a little bit more apathetic because there's no big bad demon like Donald Trump to put us up against. You're going to see a listless voter group drag out to the polls. On top of that, you have voter suppression laws that are going on in 17 states that's going to make it harder to vote anyway. If people don't think they're in a war, then they won't go out and act like soldiers, right? And we are in a war. We're in a political war for the climate and the future of America. And people need to understand that while you don't have to have acrimony for people on the other side, you do have to tell the truth to people about why things aren't getting done. I can tell you that that is a better strategy than being polite. If you tell people right now, listen, I want to get police reform passed. Tim Scott, a black man in South Carolina, can't get it done, doesn't want to get it done. Then when it's time for re-election and you're looking at Tim Scott, maybe black people in South Carolina, maybe people who care about police reform in South Carolina will come out in droves to put Tim Scott where he needs to be, which is in the private sector. Okay. To me, all of these things have to do with the way we're going to attack elections in 2022 and 2024. The way people are going to look at the landscape and the climate of their country. And playing nice with a bunch of people who are determined to take away voting rights, who are determined to tell women what they have to do with their bodies, and who are determined to let the police walk around American cities, militarized, marauding, and with no standard to be held to at all, is a losing battle. It's a losing battle. I need them to care as much as the kids that are marching down the street in Washington, D.C. care. And I can tell you right now, they don't give a fuck about Tim Scott. So what I'm telling you is, the reason why it'll make a difference is because people right now need somebody to ring the fire alarm. Like, ring the fire alarm. Hey, look what's happening. Look what's happening. Look, voting rights, what they're doing to women, like all of these things, police reform, ring the fire alarm. And they're acting like it's business as usual. And I'm fucking sick of it.
You just said it about you have to make people care. And I think it's, yes, you can point out the bad apples. And you could point out who's doing things, who's being hypocritical. You could point out who's spineless. And you could point out who doesn't care. But at the end of the day, when it comes to the voters, you have to actually make them care about these issues. And my fear is we live in a time where people don't go out and do the research. Well, people will take a headline, take a talking point, take what Tim Scott is saying and saying, oh, the Democrats just want to defund the police. We've seen it already. And they hold on to the words defund the police. And they think that we want to break up police departments. And that's not what that means. And they don't listen to Cory Booker saying, actually, the Fraternal Order of Police, one of the biggest police unions, is supporting the Democrats' bill. Why would the police union support a bill that defunds the police?
They were putting more funding for the police in the fucking bill, which I had a major fucking problem with.
But my point is the other side is sticking to the same point. They just wanted to fund the police. That's actually a lie. That's actually not even true. And so I guess the reason I say back to the whole thing from the beginning, and when you were giving your spiel and I said, I don't think that it'll change people, even if Cory Booker had called people out, is because at the end of the day, you got to make people care. And I don't even know if pointing out the people who are problems, who are stopping this from moving forward, who are stopping police reform, the reason that it's dying, which is what the Republicans want to happen anyway. So they're succeeding. They're getting exactly what they want. I think it doesn't matter if you're pointing that out, if you can't get the people who are voting to even care.
You would be able to if they knew, to me, you would be able to if they knew who was responsible for it. Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Kristen Sinema of Arizona. These are the people who are going back and forth with the Democrats on the Voting Rights Act. These are the people that are going back with the Democrats, back and forth with their own party on infrastructure. They're carrying the water for the Republicans. Tim Scott is a black man that was the face of the Republican part of this bill, this police reform bill, and he doesn't have the nuts to get it done. George Floyd right now died for nothing. Nancy Pelosi got up there after that man died and said he was a hero and that he died for something. He said he was a hero and he died for something. Other times people die for stuff, people went to war for it. Crispus Attucks died, black man, first person to die in the Revolutionary War. People got it popping after that, right? Like all of these things, they have to mean something. You can't just say that. Right now, we're living in a world, we're talking about George changed the world. It hasn't been changed. It's the same.
Yeah, no, it's the same. It's the same. And I didn't hear the part where Senator Cory Booker was naming the things that Biden has done so far since he took office. But I wonder if one of the things he said, and if he did and he should, is what is President Joe Biden and the White House and his administration going to do now? The fact that the police reform, this is something you said you were dedicated to. This is one of the things you ran on. What are you going to do now in your constitutionally mandated power to bring about some type of meaningful police reform in some form of an executive order or whatever it may be? I need to hear what your response is. I need to hear what you have to say. And then I want to see what you're going to do, what you can do within the limits of your power. I need to see it, because this is one of the reasons that people voted for you, that they were hopeful that you and your administration could bring about some type of change, that there would be something that could be done. We need to see it.
Yeah. So I am bringing up the transcript right now of Cory Booker on Meet the Press, because I want to make sure that I point out right here what Cory Booker says that that Joe Biden has done for black people, so that everybody knows that it's not a zero sum game here. That Cory Booker actually feels like that there's at least enough that Joe Biden has done for him to continue to not like to continue to support him full throatedly and not like jump on his back. Hold on, let me find it real quick. He says, I'm going to read it from the transcript. He says, what has he done for the black community? He goes, what are you talking about? We've cut black poverty, child poverty, 50%. We are the first president stepping up on black farmers, maternal mortality, getting lead pipes out of the ground. Biden has racked up one of the greatest agendas of accomplishment. It's unfortunate people don't see that. And if we do a $3 trillion bill, a $2.5 trillion bill, I'm going to push for it to be as big as possible. He's talking about the infrastructure bill right there. But it will be an historic investment in America. And then he goes into, unlike President Trump, who racked up all of this stuff right there. So what he's talking about right now, when he talks about lead pipes, getting lead pipes out of the ground, that's something that disproportionately affects black and brown neighborhoods where people live in low income housing, things of that nature. Black poverty, child poverty, 50%. I will look into that. I have no clue what it is that he's talking about or what they've passed to cut that. But I doubt that Senator Booker is lying. So I don't want to act like, of course he's not lying. I don't want to act like there has been no movement on anything. What I'm trying to tell you is that the things that they campaigned on, the things that are threatening, there's obviously child poverty. I would never downplay that. The things that they campaign on, the things that they say are the most pressing issues of our time: police reform, voting rights, the infrastructure bill. We're getting a lot of. I feel like we're getting a lot of playing nice and a lot of politics and a lot of a lot of backpatting and stuff like that. He talks about how deep of a friend that he is with Tim Scott, how much grace he has for him. He says grace. So I don't give a fuck about that. I couldn't care less about that. All right, let's take a break. Oh, before we leave, before we get off of this, I want to talk about something real quick. Do you know that there's a conspiracy theory floating around that Sonny and Anna Navarro actually were given false positive tests so they wouldn't be on set for the interview that happened with Kamala Harris because they were going to be too hard on her?
Whoa.
So the ladies on The View, tested positive for COVID. I was very, very afraid. Sonny's a cool person and a pal. And I was very, very afraid in time people get COVID, right? And so, but what I've heard is that there's at least some thought that they were going to confront Vice President Harris on what's going on in Haiti and on some of these other things. And so that all of a sudden now they were hit with false positives. They do not have COVID. They tested negative several times after that, and that there might be some animus going on at The View because they didn't get a chance to be a part of the interview with Vice President Harris.
Yeah, I've also heard the conspiracy theory that they told them that in that way on air to create drama and headlines and to get people talking. So there's a couple of things that are floating on around out there. I would like to believe that that's not true. I don't see why. Everybody is fully aware of what The View is and that it can be a tough place where you have to confront certain things that you've done or the lack thereof. And I just can't imagine that Vice President Kamala Harris would agree to come on the show and then they would have to do something like that just so she could get soft questions, because Joy can ask tough questions as well. So Joy doesn't take it easy. So yeah. I just don't necessarily, I think that that's fun to think about, but I would also think that knowing that Sonny Austin lost both her in-laws to COVID, that mm-hmm. they wouldn't fuck around with her like that, because that's really messed up. We're all sensitive to it, but for not every one of us has lost someone and someone close at that. And she eulogized her in-laws. And so it was a big deal. And if you hear Sonny talk about it, she talks about how her husband had to be pulled out of surgery because they thought he was in close contact with someone who tested positive. Her children, her parents, or her mom, I'm not sure which one. So I would hope that they wouldn't jump to those kind of extremes just to make Vice President Kamala Harris comfortable to come on a show where that's exactly what the show is about, where you get asked tough questions. Don't be in politics if you can't handle tough questions about you not doing your damn job.
By the way, just to let everybody know, I did not hear that from either of them, but it's certainly something that's floating around.
I want to talk about COVID. That's okay.
Jump up and get down. Float around. Float. Everybody float. Remember that joint, that jump around
shit? Yeah, I was thinking you were going to change jump up. Jump up, jump up and get down. I thought you were going to change that to like float around. You know, jump up, float around. Or, you know, no, I thought you were going to relate around. It to the whole thing. I thought you were going to,
When I remix a song, I have several remixes. Rules. When I remix a song, it stays consistent. Jump becomes float, and then float, it just continues to float. Wherever jump goes, float goes. Float around. That's such a good song. I'm so talented with making the songs up.
Aren't the words jump up?
I said, didn't I say float up? What did I say? Did I say jump up? What did I say? I can't remember.
I got confused. Okay.
You got confused and I got humbled. It happened all in the same time.
You might have done it right.
Speaking of COVID, the vaccine is going to tear the NBA apart. Two players, Andrew Wiggins of the Golden State Warriors and Kyrie Irving of the Brooklyn Nets, reportedly are considering sitting out home games as an alternative to taking the COVID-19 vaccine. The two cities that they play in, both San Francisco and New York, have policies that say that you can't come in those arenas unless you're vaccinated. Mm-hmm. They don't want to get vaccinated. So that means they could not play in the home games with the team. An NBA season is 82 games. Home games make up half of a team's schedule. That means both Kyrie Irving and Andrew Wiggins, theoretically, at least right now, seem to be willing to miss 41 games apiece, half the season, as an alternative to getting vaccinated. There was a media day for the Brooklyn Nets. I think it was yesterday or maybe earlier today. It might have been earlier today. Well, actually, today is tomorrow, so it was yesterday. And he wouldn't talk about it. He said it's the vaccination is a private matter. He's not going to do it. At the same time, Jonathan Isaacs from the Orlando Magic, remember we talked about him?
Oh, because, we remember him.
Yeah, Jonathan Isaacs.
Jonathan Stand Up Isaacs.
Jonathan Stand Up Isaacs. He didn't take a knee when everything was going on. He said that he doesn't want to take the vaccine. He watched something from President Trump last year that cast doubt in his head about the vaccine, even though that motherfucker is double vaxxed and living his best life, President Trump. So there seems to be a civil war brewing. The Players Association in the NBA is pushing back against a vaccine mandate that the players, that the NBA mandate
they don't
the players
have a
to be vaccinated.
They don't have, the NBA does not have a vaccine mandate.
They don't, but apparently the idea has been floated and the Players Association pushed back against that idea.
Right. So here's my thing. Well, one, I have a question. So it's New York State, or is it New York City? Whatever it is, the cities they play in. We'll just say the cities.
The cities. New York and San Francisco.
New York and San Francisco have these mandates. Can you practice? Can they even practice?
No, or is they, can't come in, they can't come in the fucking arena.
So they can't even practice. They can only just go to away games.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that they can't come. They might be able to practice at the practice facility. I'm not sure. But I know that Kyrie wasn't available. He wasn't at the media event today. He was, he zoomed in and then he simultaneously live streamed on his Instagram Live.
So I'm not even gonna,
he'll be able to go to training camp because that's in San Diego.
Like, we've talked about this in a number of different ways. You know how I feel. I'm for mandates. But since there isn't one, I won't speak to that. I think everybody should have the choice of whether they, if you want to get, I believe in mandates, okay? But if you want to get the vaccine or you don't, that is your personal choice. And I've said it time and time again, you have to deal with whatever the consequences are based on the rules that are in place, mandate or none, whether it's a city mandate or whether it's mandated by your organization, your place of work, whatever it may be. So I think, Kyrie, if it's not NBA mandated and it's city mandated, you don't get paid for the games that you don't play in. Same with Andrew. But at the same time, if you feel that strongly about it, it is so extremely selfish of you to put that on your team. They can't play with you. Like, it could be a crucial game. You can't be on the team. He can't travel and play against the Warriors. If there are other cities that decide to adopt these same mandates, like in LA, you can't play here either. We got two teams here. It's very selfish that you would decide to do, if that's your choice, not to get a vaccine, then don't play on the team. Sit the year out. Mm. We've seen Kyrie do it before.
Yeah.
Sit the season out.
Two things. Number one, I completely agree with you. You don't want to get it? Rules are rules. Yep, rules are rules. I can't go into 7-Eleven with my dick out.
You said it.
I can't do it. I can't take my dick out to 7-Eleven. It's not hurting anybody. The COVID hurt people. Me taking my dick out to 7-Eleven is benign. I mean, some people might not want to see it. Some people might love to see it. You know, but the reality is that you can't do it. They're rules.
Correct.
You can't go into a 7-Eleven with your dick out. You can't even go into a 7-Eleven with your shirt off. You got to put a shirt on. All right. So in order to do this thing for these people, you got to be vaccinated. You don't want to do it. That's fine. Nobody's going to make you. But that's the deal. You can't walk out on the court. Some guys might want to play barefooted. You can't do it. Can't do it. Some people might want to play wearing their high school jerseys rather than the jerseys they have on right now. Right. Let me wear. Like, I feel more comfortable. You can't do it. You gotta wear a jersey. There are rules.
Right.
And without rules, you can't participate. So that's that. To my point, I'm completely okay with Kyrie Irving. No, I'm not. I completely understand if Kyrie Irving doesn't want to take the vaccine. If Andrew Wiggins doesn't want to take the vaccine, fine. They can't play. It's not that big of a deal. They'll sit out. It'll be a big deal. Whatever.
But
they
sit out play. The whole year. Like, don't come in and come out. Just sit out. It doesn't. Just don't
it's
play.
Not even gonna, it's not even gonna matter because they're gonna sit out half the time, and then they're gonna have to sit out in the playoffs. It's gonna be a fiasco. A whole show. I will tell you this though. The NBA Players Association, the players that play in the league, there needs to be some leadership on this issue from them.
Isn't Kyrie a part of that?
Well, everybody's a part of the Players Association. No, I mean,
has a leadership position?
He might. I'm not sure. But what I mean is this. I mean, the NBA pecking order, the Players Association, the people, we need to hear people's opinions on this. The vaccine, COVID, all of these things are public health issues. It is cowardly for the biggest names in the NBA, for the biggest people that tell us everything else to do. They tell us which shoes to buy. They tell us which products to listen to. They tell us which politicians they like and they don't like. Mm-hmm. They tell us which cars to drive. They tell, hey, do this, do that, eat here, eat there, do this. When it's time to sell us something, they're right there getting a check for telling us what they feel like we need to do.
Yeah.
Drink Sprite. Why? Because I get paid to tell you to drink Sprite.
Yeah.
Drive a Kia. Why? Because I get paid to tell you to drive a Kia. Eat at McDonald's. Why? Because I get paid to tell you to eat at McDonald's. Wear Nikes. Why? Because I get paid to tell you to wear Nikes. But now, all of a sudden, when it's not money on the line, it's actually people's health on the line, with a hot button issue that takes some nuts to stand up and talk about, we're hearing a lot of silence from a lot of people. And if you don't want to take the vaccine, that's fine too. But I think at this point, the public who are going to be going to these arenas and supporting these players and in these spots deserve to know what these guys think of this. I think hiding behind the privacy thing now is a bunch of bullshit.
So let's call him out. CJ McCollum is the president.
Okay, CJ McCollum is the president, but CJ McCollum can't move this thing now. CJ McCollum is the president of the Players Association. He's a big deal. But the guys I'm talking about are your LeBrons.
Oh, you don't want people. Well, Kyrie's on it too, by the way. That's the biggest name that you
Kyrie's
got.
Kyrie's on it too.
He's
vice president of the guys that I'm talking about. And I'm not coming at these guys. I respect all of these guys. What I'm telling you right now is that it's starting to look, everybody's starting to look a little funny in the light because the chips are all in the middle of the table. And look, I took the vaccine. I got vaccinated, but I don't like it when I talk about the vaccine on my Instagram. It's uncomfortable because when you talk about the vaccine on your Instagram, a lot of my followers kick my ass for saying that I'm vaccinated and I think the vaccine is safe. I get it. I understand. And I'm not like a LeBron or a Carmelo Anthony or a Dame Lillard or any of these guys. I'm not any of those guys. But I'm telling you now that this is becoming a real issue and it's about public health and saving people's lives. So I don't know, nigga, say something. like, I don't know. Tell us at least what you think about it.
Well, yes, because because you speak out on other issues, and this is an issue that is not just impacting the players within the group that you play in. It's also, in fact, impacting teams, and it's impacting the NBA as a whole. So, yeah, you know, if you got players on the outside, former players like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar speaking up, it'd be nice to hear from the leaders who are actually in the league as well, because it's not like they're a stranger to speaking out on issues that impact them.
Yeah. I get it that it's a brotherhood and everybody's together. And I love the fact that it's a brotherhood and respect all of these guys. But God damn it. God damn it, I'm surly today.
Yeah. Well, it's a heavier podcast.
It is.
Lighten it up.
The Smith family's so good. They're so good. He opened up like never before, talked to GQ about some really sensitive topics. He talked about the fact that he wanted to cheat. He said he wanted Halle Berry. He said he wanted to have He said he wanted to have an affair. He wanted to have an affair with Halle Berry. He said that it was tough after the whole entanglement thing.
No shit. I guess embarrassing. I'm embarrassed for him.
He said the public has a narrative that is impenetrable. Once the public decides something, it's difficult to impossible to dislodge the pictures and ideas and perceptions. Because the impetus for the Red Table Talk was Alcina's disclosures, a viewer could have walked away thinking that Jada was the only one in engaging in other sexual relationships, when that was not, Smith delicately explained, in fact, the case. So Will Smith was also getting it in as well. It was midnight. He was going on vacation the next day. And he said for him, they were discussing things that had happened years and years in the past. And he's like, he wasn't sad about it. The look on his face, he was just fucking exhausted about the entire thing. He also said he was jealous of Tupac. When Pac was still alive, jealous of Tupac. Did this change your perception of Will Smith in any way?
I am not entertained by the Smiths.
Interesting.
I've spoken how I feel about Jada. There's just something about her that it just doesn't resonate with me. So Will Smith coming out and saying these things, basically that they weren't in a monogamous relationship, you're confirming the rumors that have been out there for years surrounding Jada and Will. It's always been rumored that they were swingers or they have these other relationships. And now you just told that. If anything, it was shocking to me for Will Smith, who does seem to come across as a person who wants everybody to be happy and everybody to get along. And he really does seem like this straight-laced guy, family man. It was interesting. Maybe that's what I should say. It was interesting to read. I read the GQ article. It was interesting to read about, you know, how he is a people pleaser, what he struggles with, how he's opening up, and how he hit his 50s, his fuck it 50s, as he's calling it. And he's just being honest about things. Not that we are even owed that. Let me just put that. We aren't owed anything from the Smiths, but I feel like he's maybe a little bit on the defense. I feel like if the entanglement issue had never come out, we would never be getting this article in GQ from Will Smith. At this point, he's a little bit on the defense because people felt sorry for him. It was a little embarrassing for him that Jada did that and it came out in that way. And she was so flippant about it. Oh, it was an entanglement. No, let's call it what it was. It wasn't just that. And it was with August Alsina, like of all people. I mean, no knock to August, but it's like, August? I don't know. That just wasn't the person. If you had lined up 10 guys, I wouldn't have picked August as the one for you. So I don't know. I find all this interesting, not shocking, not surprising. I feel like he's speaking out because he's had enough. I don't think he was just exhausted in life. I think he's just exhausted over Jada. Right. She seems exhausting over the whole situation. Mm. Yeah. They don't seem like they're, I don't know. I don't want to judge people's relationship, but just reading the article, they don't seem happy. And he as much pretty much admitted that as well. Happy together.
He's speaking out because he's got a book coming out.
Yeah. Oh, that too.
Yeah, he's speaking out because he's got a book coming out, Will, by Will Smith. This to me is the flame. This is the flame you get burned by, the flame. Look, you're in an open relationship and boom, you're going through the thing and it's fun. I get to have sex with everyone. Ooh, a relationship is fun. I get to have sex with everyone, and then somebody fucks the shit out of your wife. Some young nigga, R&B crooner from New Orleans, 6'3", comes through with a late model penis, a newer model, and just fucks the shit out of your wife. You guys have had an open relationship for so long. It's been a lot of fun. Okay. You got a nice Chevy Nova 1969 Mustang penis. And a guy comes in with a 2020 dagger and fucks the shit out of your wife. You wake up in the morning. You walk in your kitchen. All you want is some Captain Crunch. And you shake the box. Captain Crunch box is empty. There's nothing in it. Then you turn around and you look at your table. And it's a 25-year-old man sitting at your table with a bowl full of Captain Crunch. He's eating it, not with a spoon. He's eating it with one of them big-ass ladles that you taste shit with, shoving it into his mouth. And then you start to wonder whether or not you're really polyamorous. Then you start talking about you want to have sex with Halle Berry. Well, of course you want to have sex with Halle Berry now. You're trying to one-up your wife. And that's the only way to do it. Because you never thought that she would go out and get an August Alsina. You thought that she would get some Courtney B. Vance penis, some Sterling K. Brown penis, some mature, dignified
type of penis. I need you to wrap up this penis talk so I can get to this Cowboys game.
You thought that she would do that, but that's not what she did. She went out and got some 19 to 24-year-old R&B penis. That's what I read from this. That's what I got from it.
You really read into that.
He didn't think that she was going to get the latest model penis.
August Alsina, I'm sorry. Stop putting that. Stop making him a 2020 dagger, as you said.
That's what he is.
No.
That's what he is. He's a late model New Orleans model penis with a little spice and gumbo on it.
The accent that got her. Forget all that. It was accent.
Hey, baby.
It was the accent.
Hey, Redbone, let's come over here, man. Second line over on this dick. Hey, look, if they're happy, I'm happy though. But I'm telling you, you're playing around, play around. You know, you open a relationship, you might fuck around and let your girl get some late model penis. She might get an upgrade. You never know. That's when you got to choose your relationship. And look, their relationship is strong. They're still together. They gave birth. They birthed Jaden and Willow Smith. They're the greatest of all time. All right. Before we get out of here, were you up on this whole Kelly Price situation?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, how she's bizarre. Okay. She's okay. She had COVID, apparently. She nearly died from COVID. Very emotional video she put out. But this goes to show what can happen when the family's not all together. She had like a, oh, wow. That's what you, yeah.
Were
you,
no, I'm agreeing with you. I'm like, yeah.
Her daughter apparently had one thought of this. Her husband was somewhere else. Everybody was somebody, was with someone else. They were saying she was missing. She was never missing. She was saying she had COVID. Her husband now was trying to take care of her. Apparently there's some schism in the family and they don't like the husband, but I think the most important thing is that Kelly Price is okay. I was very scared for a second because when they said that she had been in the hospital with COVID and then they couldn't find her, I was thinking, damn, hopefully she wasn't in somewhere having a medical emergency and she couldn't get to a phone or something like that.
Right. And then just on the heels of us talking about missing white woman syndrome and then the story comes out, it was like, oh my gosh, Kelly Price. You know, when she did come out and she says she doesn't really talk to her family that often and there's some drama in the family. And I was just like, okay, you know, she seemed very embarrassed that the situation had gotten out of hand. So I'm just thankful that she's okay. That was shocking. When I first saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, Kelly Price, you know, she had COVID and she's missing. So I'm just glad everything is okay. Yes. I was up to date on it.
You was up to date on it. Were you scared for her? What's your favorite Kelly Price song?
I like Friend of Mine.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I like the one where it's her
and Whitney.
No, damn, I can't say that one. Damn, because R. Kelly's on that. Fuck.
Oh.
Damn, I can't say that one, man. R. Kelly's gone. R. Kelly's out of here. No, Vance, very serious question of the week. I've been forcing it lately, and I got to come up with a good one for you. I'm tinkering around with some ideas here. All right, no, Vance, very serious question of the week. But we gave him a supersized podcast today anyway. Hey, guys, just be careful. These young niggas is out here, and they are ready to fuck your wives.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just letting you know. All right. Keep everything in caps on. Do not stop learning. I am Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel and Lindsay.
Hold on. Before we go, how come the Cowboys get to get all the primetime shit? The Cowboys are on Monday Night Football. It's always the Cowboys, 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 Cowboys.
Okay.
The Saints won, Rachel. The Saints won.
Y'all played somebody sorry, though.
Y'all played the Patriots? We played the Patriots,
yeah,
baby.
Y'all played somebody sorry.
The Saints won. Who cares about the Cowboys?
Well, we've had a Thursday night game, and we now have a Monday night game that you are wasting my time. It's 20 minutes till kickoff. I want to see the game. Got the Eagles. Two of my fantasy teams are actually dependent on how this game goes, okay?
Who are you playing in fantasy this week?
I'm playing Stephen A. Smith.
Oh, you're going to win.
I'm already winning by 46 points. And
of course you are.
And the one player
anything about football.
And the one player that he has is to beat me is Ezekiel Elliott. So I find it funny. It's a Cowboys player that he has to have to beat me
to get
46 points.
Stephen A. Smith put Ezekiel Elliott on his fantasy team?
First round pick was Zeke Elliott.
Whoa.
His first pick was Zeke Elliott.
Full of shit is Stephen A. Smith, aka Cowboy Steve. Wow.
Cowboy Steve. Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to lose in my other league.
All right. All right. We out.